Hi, and welcome to another episode of Crossing the Pond. My next guest is a marketing strategist who also works as a fractional CMO with nearly 20 years of experience of helping B2B marketing companies expand globally through the power of writing and communications, essentially. Rachel built her consultancy Bolt from the Blue Copywriting whilst stranded in Hong Kong, and apparently had no money and no work visa. And so began freelancing and writing in a way that has gone on to become a long-running consultancy, which focuses specifically on complex industries. Welcome to Crossing the Pond, Rachel. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Now, I understand you're working primarily in organizations such as law, finance, medicine, and that's where you are now. But I just touched on your origin story. Could you tell us a little bit more about how you got into the world of fractional CMO and copywriting?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had no idea what copywriting was until the day I started doing it. I had gone to school for journalism and Asian studies, and I had studied abroad in Hong Kong, so I knew I was really interested in that region. But I thought I was going to be a journalist, like, you know, perhaps for The Economist or something like that. But of course, I graduated into the 2008 recession and no one was hiring. And the only job I was able to get was unpacking boxes at the Old Navy warehouse in the 5 a.m. shift.
Right.
So
fun.
Yeah, shockingly, didn't really want to spend the rest of my career doing that. So in my 22-year-old brain, I was like, well, what's the furthest away I can get from Tennessee? That's Hong Kong. You know, I like the area. So I bought a plane ticket and I left. But I didn't get a work visa before I left because, you know, 22, didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I landed there with about $200 in my bank account and I had to make rent. And so I start Googling like how to make money online, which is just ridiculous.
That could have gone in lots of different directions. I guess if that had been today, then there's even more options of how to make money online than there were in 2022, which I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I guess that's not for us to decide, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's nice. There's there's a lower barrier to entry, but I think it's so much more overwhelming. At least back then it was like, here's a bunch of scams. Also, maybe one thing that could work. And so I chose the one thing. Yeah. And it was copywriting. So I built a business out of it and I've been doing it, like you said, for almost 20 years now.
And you specialize in businesses that are trying to sell to particularly sophisticated, complex audiences.
Yeah, I kind of fell into that niche about 5-6 years ago. I've written for, astrologers, accountants, sex workers, lawyers, everyone that you can think about. But I found that I really enjoy the challenge of trying to sell something that might be difficult to understand, or people might find it a bit boring if they don't know the industry. But I think there's no boring topics. There's just boring writers. So I love writing about these really technical things in a way that make people very interested.
And you do that for businesses that are selling to audiences all around the world. Is English primarily the language that you're writing in, or is your work being translated into different languages?
English primarily, although I do like US English versus UK English versus Australian English. So they are slightly different, but yeah, only English.
Fantastic. And so the audience you're selling into, the European, or where are they typically based when you're taking a brief from a client?
So I would go American, Canadian, you know, that region, then probably UK, Germany, France, sort of that area of Europe. And then from there, I've had a couple briefs in the Mediterranean. I've had a couple briefs back in Hong Kong. I've had some in Kenya. So it's a little bit of a balance everywhere.
Okay, interesting. So this gets right to the heart of what Crossing the Pond is about. As you know, we're a B2B consultancy that is helping North American businesses primarily come to the United Kingdom. Actually, yeah. We then also help them with different regional communications as well, by virtue of the fact that I believe that the editorial landscape and threshold in the UK for B2B writing particularly is of a higher standard and perhaps more competitive than it is in other regions. So I want you to understand, was from your perspective, as the person who's really taking responsibility for bringing these stories to life and animating something that can be quite boring and technical, what differences do you take in your approach if you're writing, say, for a North American audience as opposed to a British audience?
So the North American audience tends to be a little more trendy. They want to try, you know, whatever the newest thing is, whether that's founder-led storytelling or video or whatever. They want whatever's new. And they also want to be very forward about how great they are. So it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the whole world. If you try that in the UK, everyone's like, gosh, that's so cringy. Why are we doing that? So British audiences tend to be a little more, a little quieter, a little more staid. They'll go with the classics and then sort of have a little bit of a twist on it as opposed to like, oh, let's just try a new trend. And it really matters that you're able to show your credentials to that audience because they have no interest in this flashy, like, I'm the best in the world, just believe me type marketing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I find British B2B decision makers tend to be a little bit more cynical and a little bit more fact-based. When we're writing for British audiences, facts matter more than the author.
Yes.
Whereas what I've found is that in North America, if the CEO has written something, then editorially, we can normally get it placed. If it's the right position of authority within the right organization, the substance, dare I say it, isn't as critical in a North American editorial environment as it might be in the UK. Do you concur with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think in the North American market, it's very much about who's saying it and do we like them?
Yeah.
Whereas in the European, especially UK market, it's more like, do I actually believe this? And do I think they're bullshitting me? Like there's a very low tolerance for that in that market.
Yes, I completely agree. And let's talk about Germany, because that's another environment altogether that you mentioned. And again, I think a different appetite for content.
Yeah, absolutely. It's much more transactional. It's much more fact-based. It's like, I don't need the story. We don't need to be friends. You can just tell me like, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I do.
Yeah. And I've always found data and data points in Germany are much more welcome than they might be even in the UK, but certainly in North American audiences. So in terms of the different marketing decision makers that you're essentially that are your customers, if you could have one message that went out to all the ones in North America and said, this is what you need to know if you are going to use my services at Bolt from the Blue, and this is how you get it right if you're creating a story to sell into the UK, what would be the top three things that you would say content needs to include?
So top three things. One, you need to have your facts all the way right. It can't just be like, oh, our product is 20% better. It's like, well, is it 20 or is it 21 or is it 21.5? You know, you really need to get those details just right because somebody's going to look at that and it's going to undermine trust if you don't have the details exactly right. You also need to set aside the sort of cult of personality that North American marketing has because nobody actually cares that it's you saying it. You need to think about what they need to hear. So it's, while marketing is always about putting the audience first, you have to do that so much more in UK marketing. And then finally, I think just including very clear, very simple calls to action. So in North American marketing, sometimes people like to get cutesy. So instead of saying, you know, click here, buy now, or like, here are next steps, I'll get something like, you know, help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope, buy here. And I think British markets tend to find that a bit cringy.
Yes. Although I completely agree. And thank you. That's great. That's three great, great, great points there. Let's talk about the use of irony, because I believe that that is quite different in terms of if you were creating content or even creating a marketing strategy, which I know is a big part of the work that you're doing. But eventually that trickles down to content activation. The use of irony, talk to me about how you approach that, because I believe it's quite different in North America to the UK.
Yes. So with either market, clarity beats cuteness anytime, right? So I always make sure that we're clear. But in the UK, there's this very, I mean, as you've experienced, like a subtle wittiness. And if you can pick up and you have the knack to actually pull it off, then it automatically marks you as an insider. So it's usually, it's smart, it's culturally informed. It's not like broad humor. It's the kind of humor that a lot of North American audiences take a minute and be like, oh, wait, that was funny. You're kidding. Yeah. So if you can include that, that's wonderful. I mean, Innocent Smoothies is a great example. They do that very well in their UK marketing strategy where you look at them and at first you're like, oh, cute little juice brand. But then you're like, oh, wait, you're being really funny.
Yeah. And I think there's a media outlet called The Register, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. Actually, it's one of our Bibles. There's a UK PR consultancy. We look at it daily, in fact, multiple times in a day.
Yeah.
Their editorial approach is so tabloidy, sometimes a little bit vulgar, bordering on offensive and crude. Lots of sexual references when talking about a server or a data center, which seems very incongruous, but somehow they managed to make their content entertaining and informative. Quite often, our North American clients are shocked when they are either featured in The Register and realize that the journalists have taken the gloves off. They're really looking for the facts, looking for that bite. Given that you have international clients that are looking at publications like the Register and asking for your support, how do you advise North American clients about those types of editorial environments?
So, I mean, I say I tell them what you said first off is like, they will take the gloves all the way off. You know, there is no interest in being your friend, you know, here. And they're looking to sell papers, and that's the way they do that. And so I tell them, you know, it's not about you. Don't get your feelings hurt. This is just, it's good information. You're out there. And if you can go into it and be a good sport and understand what they're trying to do and then sort of feed them that, then you can actually develop a really great relationship with it. But it's a bit like, gosh, it's a bit like schoolyard bullies, right? If you go in and you get hurt and you're like, oh my God, that's so mean. Then they're like, oh, blood in the water. We can, you know, jump on that. But if you go in and you're like, yeah, this is all a game we're playing together, then that's the approach that I tell people to take.
And I know that you are doing a lot of work in the legal sector, as you mentioned before. I haven't ever worked with the legal profession, but I understand that there's an even higher set of standards expected within these highly regulated industries and sectors, such as the legal sector. It must be hard. I wonder what you could tell me about working for a company like a legal organization in North America, coming into Europe with the expectations that things are going to be done in a certain way. There must be quite a culture shock, I would imagine.
It is. It normally requires a workshop for the clients. So just to say, like, here's the rules here. You know, you may be very familiar with the American Bar Association rules, and sure, keep following all of those. But also, we have to think about this over here. So it's just cultural education, really, of just like, I understand this is what you're used to. Here's how we're going to talk about it here. It's the same thing, but just in different words.
Yeah. And so I think Bolt from the Blue Copywriting now has been in business for, is it 20 years?
18 this year.
18. So it's coming up. Yeah. Things have changed in those 18 years.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Because 18 years ago, I'm just thinking back, probably email and digital content wasn't as prolific as it, by any means, as it has become now. What changes have you seen during that process, that time?
Gosh, we've gone through so many. I mean, the main, if I'm taking a very macro view, the main shift that I've seen is a shift from what I call objective correlative marketing to relationship marketing, particularly in the North American market. The UK is a little bit still figuring itself out there. But objective correlative being, you know, if I buy the Cadillac, I will be cool. If I smoke Marlboros, I will be sexy. Versus, hey, these are our values. Here's who we are as a company. You like us, so you're going to buy from us, as opposed to the relationship with the product. So that's the largest arc that I've seen. Some smaller things, I think this is a relatively more micro trend, but as AI has become so much more popular and people are using LLMs to just churn out content, people are craving high touch human things, ideally something you can touch with your hands. I've been doing so many magazines in the past year, like, you know, mail it in the post.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, people want things they can touch, particularly if you're selling anything high ticket, you have to like either speak with them on the phone. They want to see you face to face. You have to prove to them that you're willing to be inconvenienced to do it.
That's so interesting because in the public relations side of things, we've seen press releases go from being an essential thing to an irrelevant thing. And now for a different reason, they've become very, very important again, because of course the AI and LLMs are very press release receptive. But equally, I think that because with the work that we do is so closely associated with sales, and essentially our position is that we help you to sell more if you're a B2B company. When we first started doing business, which again was about 17, 18 years ago, a lot of business was still done in restaurants and the golf course, and a lot of business and deals were done face-to-face and through relationships and events. Then that disappeared. And now it seems to be coming back. Because your point, people want to have that connection. They want to have that trust. I think trust is at a premium in this world where there's so much information. And that's changed because we had this world where SEO was the most important thing.
Right.
And that wasn't about relationships. That was about traffic. And that was about clicks and automated sales. In my opinion, the pendulum's swung back again. I don't know if that's what you've also experienced.
Absolutely. I mean, I was on another podcast the other day and this person was asking me why sales cycles have lengthened so significantly and why people who have offers that worked for so long, or just it's not working anymore. And I say, well, I mean, the truth is, if people aren't buying your thing, it's because their friends don't like you. Because the very first thing they're going to do when they hear about your thing is like, hey, have you heard of this person? Have you heard of this company? Are they legit? You know, what do we know about them? Because we're all so jaded and we know it's so easy to plaster this image online. But if you go to your trusted circle or your mastermind or whoever and say, look, you know, is this who I should go with? That's what's closing deals.
And with forums like Reddit and even LinkedIn and the connection, a disparate marketplace of prospects can be much more connected than and are often very consultative with each other in a way that I don't think we've seen recently. I think this is a increasing level of connectivity and referrals. I think word of mouth,
yes,
to your point, has become vital in terms of the success of business sales.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've talked about the pendulum swinging and no doubt it's going to continue to move. So gazing into your crystal ball, you mentioned that you did some work from astrology at the beginning.
Yes.
So maybe you've got an insight into things that we don't have. What do you see coming next? Say the next 3 to 5 years. What will the next 3 to 5 years hold according to your perspective?
So having seen things go in about 4-year cycles ever since I've been doing this, I think we're due for another what I call an internet apocalypse in about 18 months or so. And we go through these periods where something happens, you know, whether it's the Panda algorithm update or the development of LLMs or whatever. And everyone is like, oh, business is over. Go home. We can't do it anymore. And, you know, it's not. It's just changing. So I think we're due for one of those. So people, you know, plan accordingly. Your sales cycles might get really messy in about 18 months. They will come back. And I think that we're going to start seeing a little bit of that pendulum swing back and see the integration of more tech tools with the human side of things, as opposed to what I see a lot of right now, which is, oh, just let the robot do it, you know? And then I think people are realizing, actually, it can't. I have to use this to augment myself as opposed to outsourcing all my responsibility.
So I think just let the robot do it seems to be a big theme at the moment.
Yeah.
There seems to be a limit to how far the robot can actually take things. I'm not sure that I can see a world where the human is completely taken out of that process. Do you share that same sense of optimism, or do you think that we will all be redundant in 3 to 5 years as marketing professionals?
So I think that it is absolutely impossible to replace what marketers actually do, which is not really writing stuff. It's building relationships. And that is a fundamentally human thing. You know, who knows how LLMs may develop in the next years, but right now they are very fancy autocorrects. And that's great, but that's never going to build a relationship with someone. And as we're seeing with these marketing trends, people want a human face to close the deal.
Well, that was a lovely positive note with which we can wrap up. Rachel, how do people who are listening to this find out a little bit more about you and about Bolt from the Blue Copywriting?
Yeah, you can visit me at boltfromthebluecopywriting.com or connect with me on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. And that's Rachel.Allen or Rachel Allen, A-L-L-E-N.
Yes.
Fantastic, on LinkedIn. Excellent. Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been fantastic to have you on board, and I look forward to exploring things further in the future with you.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much.